So, right. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. With me today is well-known game designer Ben Robbins. How you doing, Ben?
Hi, everybody. I'm doing great.
And just to kind of give folks some background, Ben, you were a playtester with the Mutants and Mastermind Second Ed back in the day, right?
Yes, back in the dawn of time. That is correct.
When did that come? Boy, Clinton was still president, wasn't he?
Geez, I think it, quite possibly, yeah. We might have been still fighting wars with musket balls. I believe the Age of Sail was at its high point right around then. Yeah, it was good times.
The continents were in slightly different alignment than they are today.
Yes, dinosaurs still roam some of the Earth, yeah.
So, if you're a Mutants and Masterminds player, you want to check out he's got a series of short adventures for Mutants and Masterminds, which I thought were great and were a personal inspiration to me. And he's Lame Mage Studios on RPG Now. Kind of moving on from Mutants and Masterminds, Ben's been experimenting with, I hate to say it, but I guess let's call it indie game design?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely indie game. Yeah.
Okay. And a very successful game called Microscope, which you're going to do to describe a lot better than I would, so why don't you explain that to people?
Yeah, Microscope is it's kind of the fruition of a lot of the stuff that I've enjoyed about gaming for, you know, decades now. All the time that I was a gamer since, like, you know, 1980, I was the GM, you know, 90-95% of the time, and part of the real fun of gaming was always making the world and creating all this stuff. Even when you weren't sitting at the gaming table, you were having a really good time just making all this stuff up, and then you'd show up for the game proper, and the players would get to see this tiny little slice of the thing you'd created. And Microscope is basically a game that kind of takes all that fun of making the world and kind of exploring this history and kind of making these huge things that you normally don't get to do at the table and making that into the game that everybody does together. So everyone kind of takes on a much bigger creative hat, kind of the way a game master does. But then not only are we doing that, but we're making it together. We're making this kind of surprising history together. And just to make it even weirder, instead of just doing it front to back the way you might expect, like we'll start off and we'll just march forward through time and see what happens, the game starts from the point of view that you know the entire scope of the history, you know a simple summary of it, and then you go backwards or forwards or inside out, and you drill down into the parts of the history that are actually very interesting to you, which if you think about it is pretty much how we always do stuff. If you're a GM and you make a world, you don't sit down and start from the beginning and go forward. You have an idea, and then you explore different parts of that idea as they interest you. So it's kind of really recapturing that process. And the result is that everybody at the table is pretty surprised by what you make and often very caught up in it, which is pretty great fun, I have to say. I enjoy it a lot.
And then we're talking to Ben today because he has a new Kickstarter for a game called Kingdom, which sounds like it kind of evolved from Microscope. How would you describe Kingdom to someone?
That's a tough call. The relationship between Kingdom and Microscope is interesting. Kingdom in many ways is more similar to a normal role-playing game. For example, you have a character, which unlike Microscope where you don't really have your own character, in Kingdom you do. And you play forward through time as opposed to jumping all around. So in a couple ways it's more normal. The key about Kingdom is if you kind of look around the world around us, we spend all this time, we're individuals, each of us is just a separate person, but we spend a lot of our time dealing with other people. We do. We have these groups, we have communities that we're all involved in. And Kingdom is, basically the point of Kingdom is to kind of examine that relationship between individuals and groups, how as one person, once you're part of a larger community, the community pressures you to do certain things. The community has an idea of what the community is about, and you might not agree with that, or you might be part of a community that you think is about something that you like, and then times change, and everyone is pushing the community one way, possibly in a direction that you don't like. And it's really, it's a story that's kind of as old as mankind. I mean, since we first, you know, the first tribe, the first family of people who, you know, fought a saber-toothed tiger together, that was the first kingdom, you know what I mean? And the term kingdom, it isn't a kingdom per se. It's any kind of a community is a kingdom. The kingdom's just a game term for that group of people together. And it's much more, it's a very dramatic game in a sense that you, because the characters are all trying to kind of make the kingdom that they're part of, that they're caught up in, be the thing they want it to be. They're kind of vying for control or what they think is right or what they want the kingdom to do. So there can be a lot more kind of interpersonal conflict, debates about what's right, you know, what we think things should be, can lead to very dramatic interactions between the characters.
Okay. It looks like you're kind of, the way you got playsets kind of reminds me of how Fiasco uses that same term to describe their modules.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, Fiasco, the term playsets, I think Fiasco probably coined that, or Jason probably coined that in Fiasco. It's funny because it's the, it's like with Microscope, the same thing. With Microscope, you don't need a pre-built setting of any kind, but sometimes when you want to sit down and play, it's easier just to get started. In Kingdom, you don't need a playset to play. In fact, we never play with playsets. We almost always just sit down and make a kingdom by following the steps. But sometimes if you're going to sit down and you're at a convention or you're just, you know, want to get a quick pickup game going, instead of brainstorming an entire kingdom from scratch, it's much easier to have something written on a piece of paper that says, oh, our kingdom is, you know, Camelot, Knights of King Arthur. And people go, great, let's do that one. So it's really, instead of being a necessity, like, for example, in Fiasco, the playsets are a necessity to play. You have to use a playset of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships. In Kingdom, they're basically just a bonus shortcut. You don't have to use them.
Okay. All right. You know, I would love to talk you into doing an actual play of this on the podcast sometime, because it sounds like a lot of fun.
That would be pretty cool, I have to say. Yeah, it's funny because, like, explaining how it actually works is... It's a little unusual. I think it's a little bit strange. It's not as strange as Microscope, of course, but...
Yeah. Well, it's like Fiasco. You can try to explain to somebody, then they actually play it, like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Yeah, exactly.
We actually had Jason come on the podcast maybe a year or two ago and ran us through the first hour of a Fiasco game, and it was, boy, it was the most fun I'd had gaming in just a very long time.
Yeah, Fiasco, I think one of the great things about Fiasco is because it really links into real-world things that we can relate to, you know, like I am a guy at a gas station. I am a principal of a school. Things people can get.
Mm-hmm.
Things like I am a, you know, Atlantean high priest, where people are like, well, I can visualize that, but I'm operating fiction. That gives Fiasco a lot of power, I think, to rope people in.
I would agree. Well, can you tell us a little bit about how play works with Kingdom, or is it one of those things that's just kind of too hard to describe without getting real detailed, or?
I can totally describe it. There's kind of a central concept to the way you could look at Kingdoms. Kind of my analysis of how I think real organizations work. It's a game, but I think it's actually a model that reflects real life situations or kind of these dynamics that you'll see both in real life and in fiction.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that happens a lot. People will play Kingdom, and then afterwards we'll start describing things in Kingdom terms. You know, we'll start saying things like, oh, that guy had power, but, you know, you could tell he had perspective. So there's that funny, like, you start to recognize how it kind of maps onto the real world. The basic idea is that you've got the kingdom you build together, and then once you've got your kingdom, you are going to confront a series of crossroads, and the crossroads are basically critical decisions the kingdom has to make. For example, if your kingdom was a city, you know, on the frontier of an empire, a crossroad might be, do we bribe, you know, the barbarian horde is coming towards us to attack. Do we bribe them to go away? It's not talking about whether or not we win or lose the war. The crossroad is about what does the kingdom decide to do? Because those decisions really defines what a kingdom is. Like if your kingdom's a hospital, and the crossroad is, do you cut off health care to low-income patients? That's a decision the kingdom is making, and that the people in the kingdom will care about very strongly, and they'll basically fight over the outcome.
Okay.
Yeah. And then,
go ahead.
I was going to say that the way the characters actually influence that is that there's a trinity. There's three roles that characters can have. Call it their place in the kingdom or their voice in the kingdom. And the roles are power, perspective, and touchstone. And the idea is that perspective characters, those are the people who are part of the kingdom but who understand it. They're the ones who have insight. They really get what's going on. Whether or not anybody listens to them is a totally different question. That's up to the other players. But they know the truth. And as the role not only defines who your character is, but it defines what you as a player have the authority to do during the game. So, for example, if you have if your character's perspective, your character's insight, you as a player are allowed to have your character see the consequences of decisions the kingdom will make. You can see the future, effectively. You can predict what's going to happen. So you can say, oh my God, if we bribe the barbarians to not attack the city, they're going to attack anyway. You know, you can totally lay this down. Like, no, we're going to bribe them, but they're still going to attack. And what you say is true, whether or not other people believe you or not. So you as a player have the ability to effectively kind of define what the nature of the crossroad really is, what's going to happen based on the crossroad. Likewise, then one of the other roles is Touchstone, and the Touchstone character is the one who their beliefs or attitudes reflect the attitudes or beliefs of the common people of the kingdom, the average person of the kingdom. So if you say, if you're standing there on the battlements looking at the army coming, you say, wow, I'm really afraid. Boom. The second you say that, we now know that the people of the kingdom are afraid. You know what I mean? You're the Touchstone who reflects those people's attitudes, by whatever your attitudes are. And it's a very powerful, a lot of people when they first play think, oh, Touchstone's kind of so-so, but they realize that in fact they have immense power because they define basically what most people in the kingdom want. You know, if the kingdom's a big group, you're at the drop of a hat, you get to basically steer, you get to kind of color the entire nature of the kingdom. You can have someone say something very, very alarming, you know, where we think the kingdom is all about a certain set of values, but then your character kind of idly dismisses that, and you've just in one stroke shown that the whole kingdom is not what we thought it was, and the people really aren't as caught up about this. So it's an extremely powerful role to kind of color what the kingdom is really like. And then with those two roles set aside, then the last one is power. And power, once you hear from perspective what the consequences are, and you hear from the Touchstone what the people want, power is the one who gets to decide what the kingdom actually does. Only power gets to decide. So when you actually get to the end of the crossroad, you don't have a vote of all the players of like, oh, what's the kingdom going to do? Only characters who have power get to decide, which leads to this great example of it's almost like a one person slices the pie, but the other person gets to pick, that the perspective and the Touchstone color what the crossroad means. They show us what the people want, but in the end, power could just say, no, I'm doing this thing anyway. I'm doing the thing that you guys obviously don't want, and it's going to have horrible consequences. They can just kind of go against all that if they want to. But there are prices. There are prices that will be paid if they do that.
There's always a price. Has anybody been geeky and remarked on the back in like old school Star Trek, people were always referring to, you know, the Kirk, Spock, McCoy dialogue as kind of, you know, tripartite, you know, discussions. And it kind of seems to me like they would sort of, if you're playing a kingdom game on the Enterprise, you know, you can pretty easily see, all right, perspective is Mr. Spock, Touchstone is McCoy, and Kirk's obviously the power.
Yeah, and I think the reason that kind of, you see that pattern. In fact, if you look at a lot of literature or situations in the real world, you will see that same pattern, is because I think that pattern is actually a true one. I think it really reflects what we see in life. You know, we see that kind of breakdown of dynamics. We see the people who have authority. We see the people who understand things. And then we see the people who are just, you know, people, the ones who reflect kind of, you know, our inner values or what we really want. I think if you look at a lot of situations, it'll pop up constantly. And that's actually, I think, one of the things that makes the game really fun, is that when you're doing it, it doesn't feel like you're kind of adhering to an artificial construct. You're kind of playing the way the real world is. And that's like I said before about how people will start using the terms in real life situations. You will start saying like, you know, yeah, I was in a business meeting and my boss, you know, your boss has power, but, you know, you could tell that he wasn't listening to what we were telling him what the consequences are going to be. You know, you have these exact kind of exchanges and dynamics that occur in the game that also occur in the real world.
Okay. Oh, cool, cool. Well, hey, so that's a basic idea how the game, you know, interactions work. How long is a game session? Is it just until you decide you're done, or until you get to a certain point or a certain number of somethings?
Yeah, we play a lot of pickup games that we do. We'll play pickup games with total strangers that usually run about 4 hours. We've also played kingdom games for multiple sessions. We've come back session after session and played the same kingdom. Mm-hmm. which is pretty fun because, you know, it's one of those you the drama has built up and you've got all the tension. Mm-hmm. One thing that I didn't mention that's actually very important is that the roles that you have and your place in the kingdom is not static. It doesn't have to stay the same. You might start off being a power character who's completely in charge, but if other characters basically get sick of what you're doing, they can decide to challenge you and take away your power. Or you might just decide, you know what, my character's been through a lot. I don't think I have power anymore. You know, you can go through all these kind of ups and downs. So the characters can keep changing roles as the game goes on, and they can basically interfere with each other's actions. And you can even intentionally do things you know other players are not going to like. You know, you can say, like, well, I know his character is going to hate this. I'm going to intentionally do it because I'm pushing this other character to see how far they'll go to make the kingdom be what they want. You know what I mean? So you have these kind of constantly changing dynamics of people.
Okay. I'm looking at some of the Kickstarters, the rewards stretch goals that have been opened up, and the ones that opened up at $20,000 are kind of interesting. I want to focus on Grottoes and Griffins, which is a playset that, the game that started it all, G&G, is adored by fans worldwide, which might be why so many people would fight tooth and nail over its fate. Edition Wars, Retro Clones, Lucky Dice, and possibly a short-lived Saturday morning cartoon. So, wow, that's meta.
Yeah, I'm totally meta, yeah.
So, cool. I'm guessing a playset comes with predefined characters. Who are the predefined characters for G&G?
Well, it's more like a character template you can choose from, like kind of ideas. So Grottoes and Griffins is a weird, it's kind of an extreme case, but I think it would work really well. It's quite possible in playing Grottoes and Griffins, a lot of your characters would never meet. If you're an ardent role player, you know, somewhere in the Midwest United States, and someone else is playing a character who's the CEO of, I don't know what we call it. What's our analogy for Wizards of the Coast? Anyways, the analogy for whatever the company is that owns the game.
Alchemist of the Prairie. Yeah, something.
There you go. You'll get credit for that one.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that you might be fighting over what the game becomes without really even having direct interaction. That's a very extreme, kind of diffuse kingdom. But like I said before, because people can change roles, you could have situations where somebody who is just, you know, maybe a really popular person on an online, you know, like in a forum who wrote a lot of stuff for themselves, who then suddenly, surprise, gets hired to go work at the company and go work on the next edition of G&G, G&G, G&G in quotes. Or somebody who decides, you know what, they're ruining this, they're ruining the franchise, I'm going to go off and make my own Splinter Edition, you know, and then start their own company, that all of those things would be possible. Or maybe you just sit there and rant about how terrible it is. That is a very powerful thing to do in the game.
Yeah, I remember some discussion on Twitter a year or two ago about having a fiasco playset set at Gen Con or set in the wider gaming, you know, forum verse. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, this is the, another thing about Kingdom is that the scope of time, you can actually scale it. There's gaps in the game where you basically say, okay, now we're taking an interval, a time out, basically just to let kind of time pass and have a little interlude.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, you can have these crises which threaten to destroy the kingdom in different fashions. So you could easily play, if you wanted to play the Grottoes and Griffins scenario, you could start it in effectively like the mid-70s and actually start with the dawn of the game and play it through multiple decades, you know, and actually see how these same characters deal with it, you know, across their lifespan, and even swap out characters. You can actually change characters over time. So you could say like, yeah, I had this one character for, you know, the 70s and 80s, and then we had the big corporate takeover, you know, and I changed to somebody else, and now I'm coming in as a fresh young character who has a totally different viewpoint of the whole thing.
Oh, cool. Do you have a personal favorite playset that's been a stretch goal?
Of the ones that are stretch gold, my personal favorite kingdom that I've played isn't actually a stretch goal, because I don't think it's not a playset, because I'm not sure it's very easy to convey.
Yeah.
Starfall conceptually is one of my favorite playsets. I just think that the whole concept of it, it's very like large sci-fi. The idea of these people who have way more advanced technology than everybody else, and who can effectively give these weapons to whichever star system they give their super high tech AE Vanvo kind of weapons to,
mm-hmm.
can just wipe anybody else out. And what do they use that power for? We played it a long time ago, and it was fascinating, utterly fascinating. It's the imagery of it is pretty great. So I think that's going to be a particularly sexy playset.
Just out of curiosity, was your vibe more like space opera or more like Green Lantern Corps, or what did that wind up feeling like?
Ours is very space opera, but it was actually it was very cerebral. The people in Starfall were reclusive. They lived in this kind of idyllic utopia planet of their own, and so they would just kind of walked around a lot, you know, strolling on the beach, talking. But they were very very kind of, in a way, detached from the consequences of their actions. And they viewed themselves as being very neutral, being very kind of above these things, and really kind of not wanting strife. They were kind of almost peacemakers. And they would often, the way we played it, what happened was they would often give their weapons to, they would not give their weapons to, like, tyrants who were trying to conquer neighboring systems. They would often give them to people to kind of subtly reestablish the balance. But it got complicated. Got a little complicated because, you know, people wanted those weapons.
Yeah, well, cool. There's so much cool stuff literally on the Kickstarter. If I name it all, we'll be here for like half an hour. But at Kickstarter.com and then search for Kingdom. And Ben's project is the one that comes up. He is currently coming up on over $18,000. So I imagine it'll probably be breaking 20 before it's all over. Just a whole lot of cool places that have been. Santa's Workshop looks interesting.
Santa's Workshop was a request. We just showed up one night and somebody was like, I need a break. I need some fun. I want to play Kingdom and I want to play Santa's Workshop. And I was like, who am I to say no? Mm-hmm. And it was just a hoot. We had such a good time. We had so much fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be. And almost all of these I'd want to play. The Lost Legion. I mean, because who hasn't thought about being in that situation? Or, you know, wanting to see that movie. You know, where there's a Roman legion, you know, far from Rome, surrounded by the barbarians, you know, trying to hew their way through the sea of foes. That sounds like that'd be just all kinds of fun.
Yeah, we played that. We played it at Go Play Northwest last year. Again, just a total pickup game. We sat down and said, okay, well, what do we want to play? And it was a fantastic game. Mm-hmm. It was so good.
Cool. All right. Well, and if you want to find out more about what Ben's doing in general, Ben, let's see. Is it lamemage.com or do we want to give him rsludi.lamemage.com?
Lamemage.com leads to everything else. So from there, there's a link to the blog. There's a link to the latest games. All the news is the best to get to from lamemage.com.
Okay, so lamemage.com. And from there, you can find out what Ben's up to. You can read his posts on game design theory and check out, you know, what's going on with him, you know, more recently. Hey, just out of curiosity, Ben, do you do any super scamming these days, or are you pretty much focused on other stuff?
I'll tell you, we did some... We did some, weirdly enough, fantastic microscope supers games. I made some playsets, some quick seed histories for superhero microscope stuff because we were the Story Game Seattle, which I run, hosting some indie game tables at Emerald City Comic Con, and we're like, oh well, you know, it's a Comic Con, there'll be a lot of superhero fans there, so I'll write up some like quick start seeds, and we played some just fantastic superhero games. There's a post about one on my blog. I think it's called You're No White Knight. It's about the White Knight. The superhero was the White Knight. Mm-hmm. And we played with this maybe 10-year-old kid who showed up with his dad. Mm-hmm. And the game knocked my socks off. I was stupefied. This kid blew me out of the water. You read the post, hear the whole story, but it was just one of those amazing, wow, kids totally rock. This kid just completely floored me with his sense of the dramatic. And I don't think he'd ever gamed before at all. He had no idea what we were talking about, but he was really curious and really interested. And kind of against my will, against my better judgment, I sat down and played Microscope with this kid, and it was phenomenal. So,
kind of makes you wish more kids played role-playing games, huh?
Well, I think they all are ready. They're much better at it than we think they are. And I think the fascinating thing is that a game, I mean, I grew up playing D&D, obviously, but the difference is it's just a whole different kind of, it's almost a different hobby to say, like, here's a very complicated system with a lot of mechanics versus something like Microscope where you're saying, well, this is more a game of ideas. And so watching this kid just kind of take these ideas and just launch with them was just stupendous. So, yeah, that was That's my superhero game I played in a couple of years.
Well, I'm kind of wishing you had a superhero playset for Kingdom now.
That's a good point. It's tough because with Kingdom, you need, for a good Kingdom, you want the group to be at least like 30 or 40 people. You don't want a Kingdom of like 5 people. That's too small. Okay. Because it's just the characters themselves talking to each other. There's no larger group. And so it's hard to think of like, well, what would a superhero group be, you know what I mean, that was a larger Kingdom? If you've got an idea, I'm open to it.
Yeah, and there's a couple I can think of off the top. It seems like a good fit for the Mutant Nation and Marvel.
Like that.
Huh?
Yeah, something like that would make sense.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple that I can think of, but I don't want to go down the comic book geek rabbit hole, because there's no escaping once you get into that gravity well. So, but cool. All right, just something to think about. I'll definitely be backing this, and I would encourage anyone listening, mom, my brothers, you know, my wife, to back it as well. So it looks like it's a lot of fun. Anything else you want to touch on before we call it a podcast?
No, I just accept, as always, you know, get out there and game more. Game, play all the games. That's my motto. Play them all, except the bad ones. I mean, play the good ones. Have fun. Enjoy yourself. And when you're playing, you know what? I got to say, this is my personal thing. When you're sitting at the gaming table, it's such a rare and sacred time to be able to sit down and, like, game with people. You know, have fun. Don't have a bad time. Have a good time.
That's a great philosophy, Ben.
That's how I feel.
Cool, cool. Well, hey, folks, thanks for tuning in. This is Ben Robbins. Once again, you can find him on Kickstarter. Search for Kingdom, and you'll Kingdom Space RPG should bring this one up very quickly. And his blog is lamemage.com, or his main website. I'll take you to all of his other projects. Ben, as always, glad to have you on, and thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, Mike.